Welcome to Imagine This Podcast,
a conversation show where we talk to Milwaukee's arts, cultural, and creative leaders to highlight all the incredible transformative work in our region.
We hope that after listening to the pod, you will see our region and all the awesome artists, arts organizations, and creative assets in Milwaukee in a new way.
I'm David Lee.
I'm MacArthur Antigua.
And I'm Lindsay Sheridan.
Hi there, listener. Welcome back to another edition of Imagine This Podcast, season four. Some might say this is when we finally figure out what the Dharma Initiative is all about. Hey.
Every episode is going to be season four is just like Imagine This Podcast, season four of a different great TV show.
Some people didn't like Lost as much. Some people got upset at Lost by the end. I was along for the ride. Anyway, so, but I can understand in hindsight, as those guys didn't really know what they're doing when they're making that. Much like us here at Imagine. Do we really know what we're doing?
On that note.
Fun story. I had a meeting one time with a showrunner out in Los Angeles, a TV writer.
Talk of the biz.
I was pitching him stories and ideas, and he didn't get any of them, right? And as the consolation prize, he was like, you know, doesn't mean that none of this stuff is ever going to work, because, you know, I was originally pitched to show run Lost. I was pitched to run that show, and he just didn't get it. Didn't get it, and now it's this big thing. And so,
did you know that fact when you brought up Lost, Mac?
No, I totally didn't.
Wow,
I totally didn't. I also feel compelled to share this story, so this may not make the pod. But a friend of mine, who is a singer-songwriter in Chicago, has a friend that he's done work with, and she's married to the person who wrote the pilot for Lost. And he wanted to stay producer, but the network is like, we'd rather have J.J. Abrams and Dalton, right? And like Carlton Cuse and you know, whoever the guys that ended up doing it. So the deal was for him was that this person who wrote the pilot for Lost, he would always have his name as a producer on every episode of Lost, get paid a line, right? You get paid a credit, right, for that. And so that apparently paid for this person's really, really great lifestyle. So there you go. That's my other Lost intersection. So anyway, this week, listener, thanks so much again for continuing to listen to the pod. Welcome back. And if you're new, we will eventually talk about arts and culture. In fact, we'll talk about it right now. We had the opportunity this Thursday, David, Antoine, and I, we were invited by Amy Decker over at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee School of the Arts, Peck School of the Arts, a design class, graduate level, I believe, because it was Art 529. I think the 500s are grad courses, if I know my numbering correctly. Maybe not. They're older, or maybe they're seniors.
Must
they're
be.
Older.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, they're older. Mm-hmm. But the premise is they're about to take on equity-driven placemaking. So this class, they have a capstone project where they would get to know a community and partner with the community to identify a way, utilizing design towards that. And so Professor Decker brought us in because she had witnessed Antoine and I at the Lubar Center about, I don't know, it felt like 5 years ago, but it was actually in December, do a presentation about how, Antoine has been leading placemaking efforts as well as some other things. And so she's like, can you share those stories with our students and have them think about that? Because really what she wanted to make sure is that these students really try to lean into empathy with the community members and the stakeholders they're going to design for, right? It's almost a nuance. It's like, yes, you're a designer, but the most important thing for you is to listen and understand before you do that. And so we, David tagged along because he did like the 5-minute opening commercial. And it was almost like when Russell Simmons did Def Comedy Jam, he would just come out for the opening and then he would leave. And then
I was basically the hype person.
He was the hype person. And so we did 2.5 hours though, Lindsay. We did 2.5 hours, which I'm sure, like, did we get a check for 2.5 hours? That's a fair question. No, we didn't get a check for 2.5 hours of work, but we took 40 students through, I utilized a lot of my improv work in an applied way to support them in actually ultimately getting to a point where they did monologues of people in their lives that mattered to them. And so I actually got them to do a series of exercises to get to the point where they can actually do character monologues.
Wow.
And the point is how to utilize theater as a tool for empathy and practicing empathy, which they did. And then after that, we had them think about different stakeholders in different communities and how they could be involved in taking on various issues. And so Antoine led that part. And he shared the story about the work we've been doing at Metcalf Park, as well as some of the stuff we did over in Amani with Moody Park. So that was sort of a little bit of show and tell. That's what we did this week. And it was really cool. And it was a really neat way to think about placemaking and show sort of like the imagine mindset and our way of how we like to convene and connect. And I'm still going through all the evals. Our evals was like slap on a post-it note. How are you as you're leaving? What resonated with you the most? And what will you do on your project because of this? So I'm still going through it, but there were some really cool pieces. One piece was that somebody said that she invoked her sister. And as a result of this, she's going to call her sister and talk to her differently than she did before. So I was like, ooh, that was super cool. Like, I'm glad that happened for you. Yeah, she actually had shared publicly, like when we were processing, like, hey, what happened? She's like, yeah, I've thought of my sister in this way, but this sort of invited me to think of her in a different way. And I wonder what would happen differently if I approached her in that way. I wasn't even ready for that. I'm like, wow, that's what you got. Pretty cool. So
I'm curious. Do you see any other kind of light bulb moments where it seemed like someone seemed to reach a new understanding about their work or express it in a different way in the moment? You'll probably read them in the evals after, but
yeah. Well, are you saying in the moment did we observe something?
Yeah.
That well, we asked people some questions after, like what was like to go through those activities. And for a lot of them, it was refreshing because it was 8 a.m, you know, and they're like not used to being, we had them literally on their feet for 40 minutes, moving around, engaging, you know, not, it was funny. The Professor Decker was like, hey, be sure to break out your notepads and your pens to take notes. And then it's when we're like, hey, put down your pens and notes. We're not going to write anything for the next 40 minutes. And so I think what we invited them to think about who are stakeholders that don't get acknowledged or thought about. And some, you know, there were some suggestions where I'm like, I never thought about animals.
So can I just tell Matt, can I just interrupt here and tell the story?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
So it occurred to me like pretty soon in that I didn't have a whole lot to do. Right. I sort of gave the hype man speech at the beginning, but I think what was powerful for me was to be able to see you and Antoine do the work and sort of experience it to sort of repack, you know, to sort of like be able to tell the story. Right. And so I'm watching and I'm participating and there are like some really incredibly powerful moments throughout the sort of improv exercise part. And because you don't oftentimes get an opportunity to kind of like hold eye contact with somebody, for example, and be silent or like sort of take on a character as Mac sort of led people through. The part that Mac didn't share was that once we did all of these warm-up exercises and Antoine told the story about how we engage neighborhoods and do sort of our equity-based sort of creative placemaking, we broke the kids out into five or eight different groups to think about different social issues in Milwaukee that they might want to work on and different stakeholders that they might want to engage and how they might want to engage them and some solutions and so on and so forth, right? So there's civic engagement, public safety, cultural vibrancy, all the kinds of things that we work on here, environment. Yeah. And so these kids are working on it and they're like really like taking it incredibly seriously, I think partially because, you know, Mac sort of led them through this sort of empathy-based sort of like warm-up, right? Where they're really kind of like thinking about putting themselves into the shoes of other people. And then, you know, the cap off to that was place a plus sign on stakeholders that don't typically get invited to the table and place a star on communities that you were surprised by in each one of the areas, right? So the kids had to walk around and sort of like take in all of everybody's work. And, you know, we reconvene and Mac is kind of doing the wrap up. And, you know, he's like, hey, what surprised you all? And I don't know, Mac, if you'd seen it, right? But like there was one stakeholder that was animals. And a lot of people had voted for animals in the public safety sort of group. Yeah. And this one young lady raised her hand and was like, you know, never really thought about animals. Yeah. And I'm standing on the edge watching Mac sort of take this in. And the way that Mac sort of takes in like information that's surprising eyes sort of widened a little bit, and it's like, yeah, I never thought about animals either. And like, he sort of lands the plane so gracefully, right? He's like, yeah, you know, like, there are a lot of pet owners in Milwaukee who care about their animals and probably, you know, feel.
I was making it right. I was making that answer right. I was making that answer correct. I was like, yeah, there's a lot of pet owners.
Like, people don't think about animals, right? And in the same way that, like, in the environment subgroup, somebody is like, hey, we don't ever invite the Earth to tell us what, and that has a lot of votes too.
Yeah.
And it was like a useful insight.
Yeah. Well, I think the Earth does tell us things like the water rising, droughts, like that is the Earth telling us things. We're just not listening. Right. Like,
yeah, we just don't listen. That's right.
So I actually think the Earth does have a voice.
Or how do you invite the Earth to the table? Right. I think that was the other, you know, but I think, and I don't think that the students were like sort of making a row at it. Right. Because I think they were taking it very seriously, but there is an insight that like, how do you sort of include these populations that don't typically get.
Oh, they also mentioned the homeless
folks,
you know, and they're like, how do we include their voice? And I'm like, that's a great point. Like they interact on these systems and they're not, you know, all these things. So anyway,
such a pleasure to see you and Antoine sort of do your thing in that sort of a setting. I know I wasn't able to make the social good morning, which is also the other reason why I wanted to go to this. But it was really great to see.
Yeah. Oh, and Antoine was great. I mean, they love Antoine's energy, obviously. He's like the Pied. I always joke, he's the Pied Piper at the end because there's like eight people talking to him afterwards. And then I also say, I'm the roadie, taking everything apart and taking everything down and all this stuff. So, they laughed. They like that. They're like, oh, yeah, that's right. That's probably going to happen.
If you're the roadie and I'm the hype man, what does that make Lindsay?
She's in the back counting the merch. How much? Don't
answer this question seriously.
She's like, how come we're not selling more shirts?
I'm the tour manager.
She's like, sorry guys, we're not eating today. We're just driving through to Birmingham. We're just driving the truck through, guys. We're just gonna make it. No stopping.
Get on the bus on time.
Get on the bus, you losers. Get on the bus, you losers. So that was. I'm really excited about that. May 5th is when they're gonna present their projects back. They invited us back. And so we'll see how we'd like to see what they created. So
that's awesome. And I appreciate hearing their deep insights and was laughing through it. Not because I don't also want to consider how we invite the Earth to these conversations, because that is fascinating. But that Mac, who's a professed pet hater, was confronted with.
Oh, hold on.
Oh yeah. Mac's war on pets. That's right.
I gotta stop this right now. America, those listening on the Voyager, like beyond, like at the Hubble telescope, whoever's listening to this, I do not hate pets. I am human first. I just want to make a clear delineation that, hey, love your pets, love your animals. I just don't have time for it. And that's great. Live your life. I'm going to live my pet-free life. So I don't hate pets. I just don't prefer them. I prefer them so least that I, you know, there you go. So set the record straight, because I don't like my opponent here in the debate calling me a pet hater. I'm not a pet hater. They bring so much joy to people. They just don't bring joy to me.
This is Max war on pets.
That was nice. I like that.
We are gonna start the Twitter rumor to get you canceled by the Wisconsin Humane Society that you hate pets.
Oh yeah, there you go.
War on pets.
Can I also remind that Lindsay did audition for Fox News? Can I audition for Lindsay? She did audition for Fox News recently. Talking about patriotism and talking about the war on Christmas, so, which she is a full-fledged lieutenant in the protecting Christmas. She's a full-fledged lieutenant protecting Christmas. So just want to put that out there.
No,
that's my time. That's my time, moderator. That's my time. Okay. That's my time.
We got to move on.
Oh man,
you started it and I finish it, Lindsay. Don't go on these platforms calling me a pet hater. Because I will not stand for it.
We also shouldn't forget, Mac, about your war on Christmas music too from last year. I don't know. Were you reformed or what happened there?
Oh no, I'm still not into Christmas music. I don't like it as a genre. I still stand by that. I'm doubling down on that. Come outside and fight me. Don't at me, but we'll fight. Let's fight about it. All right, Lindsay, get us back on track on placemaking. You had a conversation on placemaking. Is that correct?
I did. That's right. So there's the, so Max shared with us an opportunity for for students just coming into the field to learn about placemaking and how to consider the people they're serving, center the people they're serving. I had the opportunity to talk with, which you'll hear after the break, Derek Kanian, who is doing real-time placemaking in building a new space and a new hub for art on Vliet Street. So Derek is the founder of Art Intersection MKE, and he's also on, currently on the Washington Park Neighbors Board. He's a Milwaukee native. So he's creating Art Intersection to be a place where people can come together to experience human interaction and art in a way that sparks positive community change. He really understands art to be integral in all parts of life and essential to human connection and well-being. So he's creating a home for that. And Derek is also a nationally certified sign language interpreter. So in the interview, you'll hear more about his career in that and what that has taught him and about his own personal background as a member of a family of artists and as a musician himself growing up in Milwaukee. After the break, Derek. Hey, Derek, welcome to the pod. How's it going?
It's all right. Thank you for having me on the pod. Super excited to be here today.
Yeah, absolutely. Glad to have you. I am totally fascinated by your background as a prolific ASL interpreter and also a founder of Art Intersection MKE. And so excited to get into more about your background, more about your dreams for the future and all of that in between. So, you know, to get us started, we generally like to ask our guests about an arts and culture experience in their past, recent or long ago, that left a strong imprint on you. And I know you were saying you have endless choices to choose from. So I welcome more than one story if you want, if you have a few floating in your mind that you're excited about.
Right on. So again, thanks for having me on the podcast today. Thinking about like arts or cultural experience that have left like a strong imprint on me, I would have to say it's been my upbringing, right? Coming from a family full of artists, you know, my dad, my mom, my dad played the guitar and traveled the country, traveled the world playing with the gospel choirs and all that. And my mom is a vocalist and she's a ceramicist. So she has like degrees from UW-Milwaukee for ceramics and Hebrew studies. And then I'm the third of six kids, right? So all of us all have some type of artistic background, from music to my younger brother in film, visual arts, and also theater as well. So I would say the experience that I've had growing up and going through the arts program through MPS has made a tremendous impact on my life.
Yeah. When your dad was traveling, playing music growing up, would the family join? Would you go along and on some of his tours, or no, not so much?
Not so much. It really depends on if it was local or not. Was really heavily involved in like gospel choirs and all that. So going to church services, he'll like play every Sunday. So he worked at A. O. Smith. So coming from like a blue collar background, you know, for the most part. And my dad was just a hustler, man. Like he was always on it. And like he'll work all night, like working a 16-hour shift at A. O. Smith. He was a tool and die maker, a wonderful man. Then he'll come home, and then straight from there, like, hey, everyone get up, let's go to church. We gotta go, right? Yeah. So then you end up jumping in the station wagon or the minivan at that time or what have you, and roll in, and he's on the stage with the praise and worship team doing his thing. So being involved in that, and like my older brothers, playing the sax and the trumpet, and we're like singing and stuff like that. So that kind of propelled us into this space of like just being always around the arts, you know?
Yeah. Did you follow in their footsteps some too? Did you end up playing an instrument, or do you play, or how did that kind of, seeing that as like an example of, oh, this is normal, like, and my parents are getting so much joy from making art, like, how did that impact you?
Yeah, so like I said, I went to arts programs my whole life. So I went to Elm when it was on 26th and Garfield. That kind of shows my age. But I started out playing violin when I was four, right? Mm-hmm. And then going into the piano. And then I played the French horn after the fifth grade, going through high school. And I, luckily enough, I had the experience of joining MISO, Milwaukee Youth Symphony Orchestra. And I was able to have private lessons with one of the chairs of the orchestra, MSO, Jean Cirque. She was a fantastic, fantastic person to work with. So played with MISO. I played with Lake Band, doing like marching band stuff. I sang as well. So after high school, I auditioned to be with the symphony chorus. So I was able to get on the symphony chorus for a little bit, but I didn't stay on because life happens, you know, being a 17, 18 year old kid doing your thing or trying to figure out life, I should say.
So it's always, always been a part. So tell me more about the path that led you to sign language interpretation from that.
Oh, wow.
How did you know, you know, how did you first get introduced to it? What started to resonate with it? With you that made you think, oh, I could make a career out of this. Yeah, tell me more about that.
Yeah, it's an interesting kind of chain of events, you know, how like when you're an individual that is always looking for the next opportunity or open to possibilities, right? The first time I've ever really saw like a sign language interpreter was in high school. There was a deaf student. I remember seeing a young lady walking around with them, but I never really paid any mind. Like I said, my path to getting to become an interpreter is kind of like a winding road, if you will. Like straight after high school, I didn't go straight to college, right? So I was trying to figure out what I was going to do. And I was looking at possibly going into the fire department, but that kind of fell through. So then I became an EMT. I was working as an EMT. And then I worked at like a gas station on the east side of town at the same time. And then I was in retail. And then I was doing all these different types of things, right? And then I decided to go back to college because I wanted to get into, you know, medicine or healthcare. At UW Milwaukee, you know, you have the language requirement. We're looking through the catalog and I'm like, hey, sign language interpret or sign language is a class, right? Yeah. I'm like, oh, well, you know, it should be cool. I don't know. It might be a little bit easy. It's unique. Yeah. Might be a little easy. You know, I don't have to learn how to write a language. I just learn how to speak a language because, you know, there's no written American Sign Language, right? So, so I took the first semester's class and it was pretty interesting. And the cool thing about the UWM program is that they have deaf instructors or ad hocs or professionals or professors teaching American Sign Language. So it's like you have a native user of the language, so you don't have the crutch of using your native language of English. So took the first semester of it, ASL1, which was cool. Then I took the second semester because, you know, you need your two semesters. And it was a situation where you have to go out into the community to a deaf club or go to a deaf event to socialize in the community and then write like a reflection of your experience. Okay. And I think that was like the third semester, like ASL3. And it was closer to the end of the semester. And we were learning a ASL story, right? It was almost like a joke. And so transitioning into going to this deaf event or this community event, it was a storytelling event, right? So people get up in the deaf community, they tell these stories and it's beautiful because it's very poetic. It's visual. It's basically like writing a poem and using metaphors and similes and rhyme and all that, but using it in American Sign Language.
Right.
So dope. Yeah. So the situation was, it was more like a competition, like a storytelling competition. So my silly young self was like, hey, I want to win a couple bucks. And I remember this story that my professor taught us. So let's see if I could do it here.
Yeah.
So I stood up and did it and it was ridiculously terrible, but it was one of those things where it's like a young person new in the community trying to be involved in the community like just kind of putting myself out there as wanting to be a part of this, right? And it was one of those things that I didn't realize that I was the only person that could hear that actually told a story. So it was like one of those like cool experiences. Not to say like I'm super dope, but it's just the thing of like, hey, if I want to learn this language, I need to put myself out there.
Right. And also validation, like, oh, I can do this.
It's pretty rad.
Fit in.
So then the cool thing is after that experience, the director of the interpreting training program, Chris Kozinski at the time, God bless her, approached me and was like, hey, you should become a sign language interpreter. I'm like, what's that? And she was like, well, yada, yada, yada. I told what it was all about. It's like the whole idea of like providing access for people who can't hear and like, you know, that kind of thing. So I was like, cool. Yeah. Sign me up. Right. Mm-hmm. So that's how I kind of fell into it.
Yeah.
So it's one of those things. So luckily enough, it was all about connecting with people, right? Because that connection led me into the interpreting training program at UWM, which led me to another person by the name of E. Dicker Eisman that connected me with an organization in Washington, D.C., where I did an internship or a mentorship in. And that kind of got me out of Milwaukee and into this full realm of sign language interpreting.
Yeah, yeah. I'm curious, you know, hearing about the storytelling and not really knowing anything about sign language myself, is there, when you're thinking about how to best translate something in sign language, you talked about it, the storytelling being very poetic and kind of more metaphorical. Is there an element of like a moment of translation where there's the literal way that would be like the really accurate, I'm telling exactly what someone is saying. And is there more of a talk about that, like the interpretation that goes on in your brain of like, what's the best way, going to be the best way to express this that's literal or leans more metaphorical? Like, does that factor in at all, or not? Am I off base? Yeah.
Well, it does. And the interesting thing is this is going to turn into more of like an linguistic type of conversation then.
Yeah.
It has more to do about how people use language. So a lot of people don't really understand that American Sign Language and English are not the same language.
Yeah.
The structure and the grammar of the language is completely different. So whenever you go from English to American Sign Language or vice versa, it's an actual interpretation. So you're interpreting the meaning of what is being said. So you could say things in a very poetic way. Like I could decide to sign something and use more what would be called classifiers in which one uses their bodies to depict what is being said, or depending on who you're providing services for, they actually may want the English translation, like word for word English order. So it really depends on the client that you're working with.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Tell us a little bit more. It sounds like, so you had this opportunity where you stepped away and you're in DC for a while. Was coming back to Milwaukee obvious to you, or did it feel like a choice that you wanted to come back, or that you needed to come back? Can I ask a little bit about that?
Sure. That's a loaded question. I was in DC from 2005 until about 2013.
Okay.
And at that time, I came back to Milwaukee because of family. If it wasn't for that, I would still be in DC. Well, who knows where I would be, but that is where I wanted to be.
Yeah.
The cool thing about DC and the interpreting community there is that, I mean, if you look around, you don't see a lot of interpreters that look like me, like a Black cisgendered male, you know, straight, that have no connection to the deaf community at all. Sure. And being here in Wisconsin, there's less than a handful of us who are nationally certified. Whereas when you go to DC, you know, the numbers are small within the interpreting profession of Black interpreters, but you have more of a network there.
Sure.
And I would say being there in DC, if I wasn't there, I probably wouldn't be interpreting now because of the support that I've had from, you know, the community, the Black interpreters that were there, like my big sisters that were there.
Yeah.
You know, I could run off the names for them, but I guess I won't do that at this point.
Yeah.
But yeah. If it wasn't for them, I probably would be doing this as well. But going back to your question, coming back to Milwaukee wasn't like a major choice or something I really wanted to do. It's something that I kind of did kicking and screaming. After coming back to Milwaukee, I started traveling quite a bit as a sign language interpreter. So like working in Atlanta, Chicago, out west, going back east, back and forth to DC. Even have been fortunate enough to do some work internationally as well. And it was all based on connections with people, right?
Yeah.
And it wasn't anything of my own, like something that I did on my own. It's like, it was just me when that happened, right?
Right, right.
And so it's all about timing and all that.
Yeah.
As well.
I'm curious, you know, talking about the sort of network of support that you had in DC and some mentorship and whatnot, it reminds me of it might not be a perfect parallel, so I'm curious if this resonates or not, but it reminds me of networks of freelance musicians too. I lived in DC and didn't do a ton of freelance myself, but had friends that were full-time freelance musicians, and there's that element of like needing to get into the network and build relationships and build trust such that like when someone can't take a gig, they'll recommend you. Is there an element of that same sort of like sharing of work and freelancing and interpreting too?
Of course. Yeah. I have my own organization and I work as an independent contractor. I've been doing that since, I don't know, 2008. Wow. Mm-hmm. Doing this for a long while. So throughout your time working, you like, as a musician, you have a network of people that you work with who are independent freelancers as well. Yeah. So then we end up bouncing work off of each other, or it's like you vibe really well with a colleague. So it's like, hey, anytime I do this job, I know they got my back and they're going to be a great support person. Yeah. And I know what their skills are and they know my skill and they know what I need and I know what they need. And when we're in a sticky situation while we're providing interpreting services. Yeah. So yeah, it's a major factor. Mm-hmm. And it's a big thing in interpreting community from my experience.
Yeah. Yeah. So a huge amount of hustle involved, but also then through it, hopefully you find a community that feels mutually supportive on your journeys in that. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. It's really cool. Like, because like talking about what we do for a living, right? Like a lot of people don't really understand like what we do with our brains.
Yeah.
And how we like, yeah, just how we take on other people's stuff,
right?
And the cool thing is, like, I find it to be a very humbling, and I feel it's an honor to be able to be in this space where I'm working with people in very intimate situations, and how I could be in a situation where I'm interpreting for someone who is going to the doctor, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, and then at the same time, I can interpret for someone who is giving a speech or someone that is, and being their voice while they are producing their language and talking to the community about whatever issue or training or something. And then I could go, being in Washington, D.C. and working in any government agency at any time, providing services there, right? And then providing access at performances, you know, whether it's theater, comedy shows, or like musical music concerts and all that too. So it's like being able to be in these spaces, not to quote unquote help, but to provide access and bring people together and allow people to connect through language.
Right.
The best thing is.
No, the incredible array of circumstances that you work in, that like, you know, to the average kind of consumer that doesn't speak ASL, doesn't necessarily have close relationships with deaf people in their lives. I've seen an interpreter at a performance or whatnot, but you play so many different roles and wear so many different hats in these different circumstances as you're sharing that people don't think about, or at least I don't think about. Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting.
So you're back in Milwaukee. And on top of an already busy and thriving career, you're also starting Art Intersection MKE. Tell us more about this initiative. How did it get started, and what's it been? What have you learned so far? What are you hoping to grow this into?
Well, wow, there's so much to say about it. Well, the whole point is it all started out based on COVID. Right. And the idea of like being back in Milwaukee and wanting to, you know, have roots here now. You know, I have a 5-year-old son and I'm not going to be going anywhere. We've been back in Milwaukee for, I don't know, almost 9 years now, even though I've been like out and about, somewhat of like a nomad interpreter. Right. So then while I'm back here in Milwaukee now during COVID, I'm thinking to myself, like, okay, where we're going to really have roots. And then I was thinking about like, how about we live in Wauwatosa? We think about like the school system. We think about what safe neighborhoods look like. And then I think to myself, why is it that we don't want to live back yeah. where I came from. You know, yeah. I'm from Milwaukee. I'm from the 53206 zip code and spent time in the Washington Park area. Mm-hmm. You know, like because going to Washington Park, hanging out. And then also my mom and dad, my mom used to wait tables or was a waitress at the Interlude. And my mm-hmm. dad and mom used to perform there. And mm-hmm. then also I had like aunts that lived up in the apartments upstairs. So I've spent time in that area. And I'm thinking to myself, like, what are we doing to make our community better? Mm-hmm. Right. And then the idea of like, okay, when we have violence and stuff like that happening, like I remember growing up, like when you're in these spaces, like, you know, it's bad, but at the same time, there's a sense of community there.
Right.
Right. Right. So it's like the idea of like, what am I doing or what are we doing to make stuff better? So I thought sure. of like creating a space that we could bring people together to have a sense of community again. Mm-hmm. And knowing having my experience with the arts, you know, knowing how transformational it can be, I was thinking that using arts as an instrument or a tool to bring people together to establish community.
Yeah.
And that's how Art Intersection came to be. The idea of using public art to change the face and the aesthetic of a community, because there's a number of examples across the country where this mm-hmm. is a thing, right?
Oh, yeah.
And I didn't really realize that until, you know, going into this process. And then I'm thinking about being away from Milwaukee and coming back into Milwaukee. What is it that is missing within our community?
Yeah.
And the cool thing about being in Washington, D.C., living not too far from the National Mall, it's like you can go to places and there's art all over the place. You have like sculpture gardens and stuff like that. It's like, why don't we bring that into the middle of the Milwaukee area? Like, why don't we have that in the hood? You know what I mean? Like, that would be so dope.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Like, and then just think about how it could change people's mental health and how they feel about where they live. It makes me think of Bill Strickland in Pittsburgh, too, right? Like the idea of like creating spaces and raising the level and expectation of how people should behave to some degree in those spaces, because you show them what they're worth by having cool things in their environment, right?
Right.
I'm not sure if that came off the way that I want it to, but it's like the idea of like showing people you're worth it and people will feel that. It will vibe with them and they'll connect with it. It'll change. It can change the face and change the feel of where you live and how you feel about where you live.
Right. So as you begun to explore Art Intersection, is that idea manifesting as a physical space? Are you in a physical space or looking for one, or is it about more so about what you can do externally, public art facing, that's not tied to one space, or how's that kind of balance playing out?
It's multifaceted. The idea of being a space mm-hmm. that is a hub for all things that are arts, mm-hmm. right? The idea mm-hmm. that the arts intersects with all aspects of human existence, almost like science. You can't think of anything
in
the human experience that isn't artistic,
right?
Like even if you think about chaos, you think about being cathartic, if you think about love, you think about relationship, you think about sport, you think about any aspect of how we express or understand the world around us all has something to do with art.
Yeah.
Right. So to answer your question, we want to occupy a space and create a space. So luckily enough, just recently we were able to acquire space on Belit Street, which we've been targeting between 35th and 37th in Belit.
Yeah.
So right now we have a lot there that we're looking at building out. The idea is to have a gallery space and a sculpture garden.
Yeah.
Working with the nutritional gardener, Judy Schmeling, to provide support in regards to landscaping and being able to have horticulture type programming as well.
Cool.
The idea of having a space that is fully accessible for individuals with disabilities or with any ability, because the idea of that at any given moment, the cool thing, I'm sorry for jumping around, but
please,
like the work that I've done as a sign language interpreter has afforded me to see things in a different way. So I work with centers for independent living or the independent living movement. And it's like this saying that they have a lot of cool catchphrases, right? And one catchphrase that they have that is really poignant and important is that at any point, anyone can become part of the disability community,
mm-hmm.
right? Mm-hmm. And at any point yeah. in life, as we age, right. we lose some of our capacities, if you will, right?
Right.
And there's, and if we think about things in universal design, that means everyone will have access to something, or, mm-hmm. you know, access mm-hmm. to information, access to, you know, entertainment, access to human connection, being fully, you know, immersed into the community. And yeah. that's the kind of space that we want to create at Art Intersection.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so exciting. Tell me about the process of kind of beginning to have conversations about this leading up to acquiring this physical space. Has there been anything that surprised you or that you didn't expect? Or that was affirmed, kind of either sides of that, where I thought it was going to be this way and it was, or I was totally kind of caught off guard by this. Curious.
Going back to what we were talking about before, I think everything has something to do with timing and mm-hmm. other humans, right? And human mm-hmm. connection. The timing just happened to be what it was with being in COVID. And then the thing that is surprising to me is like how welcoming and how supportive the arts community is here in Milwaukee and how thriving it is. Because if you look at other cities, I don't think you could find the same amount of support from individuals within the arts community in other cities as we have here in Milwaukee.
Yeah.
I've been able to make contacts with one person, say for example, Yev from UW Milwaukee, who told me, hey, you need to talk to Polly Morris at the Living Sculpture Garden. So then I talked to Polly and she has all these cool ideas and she's amazing, right? So then she connects me with someone else and then they connect me with someone else. And then we end up having like these synergies, right? Of how we could make Milwaukee a better place, you know, a better arts cultural space. And the cool thing is like, I think within Art Intersection, the idea that there's really no competition, if you will, because the whole idea of that we could establish a network of arts organizations around the around the city, which I think is a cool thing that Imagine MKE is all about, right?
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
Well, and I think what you're describing is feels like affirming for me in that I think we spend a lot of time as an arts community feeling like we are so behind peers in terms of resources, in terms of profile, and in terms of more people in more positions of power understanding what you're describing as being art being connected to every element of life. And so if that's the case, which we know that it is, then art needs to be involved in every conversation in city planning, every conversation in how we talk about community development. And it can feel a little bit like, are we behind the ball on that a bit? But what you're describing is maybe, yes, but we've also got really passionate people that are all working towards this thing in such a way that they're willing to share their connections. They're willing to hear your great ideas and connect you to the right people so that we're all moving forward together. At least that's what I'm gleaning from what you shared. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I agree with you. The interesting thing is, yes, Milwaukee is very behind in regards to, you know, transportation infrastructure, in regards to a lot of different things here. But I noticed within even the last couple of years, even with COVID, we're having somewhat of a renaissance in regards to like arts and culture here. If you look at what's going on in Harambe, if you're looking at what's going on in the Brownsville neighborhood and how now we're getting national and international recognition in Brownsville, dope is that, right?
Yeah.
And we have no studios here.
Yeah.
Like really, really like high quality, beautiful spaces, beautiful work that's happening in the city. At the same time, I think there are some gaps. Mm-hmm. Like I said, gaps in regards to synergies, gaps in regards to certain neighborhoods not having the type of connection or attention from the city. like the whole idea of like a lot of disinvestment that's gone on in the city.
Yeah.
Like we have so many vacant lots and vacant properties throughout the city. Like,
right. Right.
Yeah. I mean, we're kind of like an economically depressed space. Like with, you know, Milwaukee being a big blue collar city, we don't have A.O. Smith anymore. We don't have Ambrosia Chocolate anymore. You know, we don't have Pabst running here anymore, really. Right.
Right. Right.
So it's like, what's next?
Yeah.
But it's like, yeah. We have to, and it's like the idea of investing in the community with the individuals who live there now, mm-hmm. right? Instead of waiting until, you know, some developer comes in and then changes the face of it. And then now it becomes, you know, oh, this is a happening spot. It's like, why is it that we're not investing in our community, in the communities across the city?
Right.
Well before that happened. Right. So that's what I want to do with Art Intersection, MKE.
Mm-hmm. So as you dream about what the space is going to become now that you have it, it feels like it's probably in your mind entering into, you know, it feels more tangible, feels like it's happening. What does the road ahead look like for the space and for starting to get projects in there, starting to get neighbors in there? What does that look like, do you think?
Right now, the process, this is the difficult part of it, right? When you're trying to get elected officials buy-in, because right now we're needing to change zoning for the space and all that, in the process of developing new plans or renderings for the space. Mm-hmm. But hopefully we would like to have some projects up this year. A couple events, have some programming for later this summer. Luckily enough, we are now a sponsored project from a nonprofit by the name of Fractured Atlas out of New York.
Yeah.
So now we're in a position where we're able to really, you know, solidify ourselves as being a legitimate right. project.
Right. Right. So what they offer is that now you have the nonprofit grounding to receive donations and get things kicked off in that way. That kind of skips over some of the having to establish yourself as a nonprofit, which is so
exactly
paperwork odious and whatnot. Yeah.
Right. And this is the idea of being able to be a sponsor project to like have donations that goes towards programming.
Yeah.
You know, and that's so cool to think of, like thinking about like how we are able to now budget and provide programming that is free or low cost, but at the same time, very high quality.
Right.
And the idea of making sure that we pay artists what they're worth, because I think that's something that is an issue in the arts community here as well. Mm-hmm. The idea of like artists are just happy to get their work out and to get their work seen. But at the same time, we need to make sure that people are compensated for the work and the time that they put in to doing their craft, right?
Right.
So hopefully we'll be able to, like I said, get some things rolling this summer. Looking at attempting to have some synergies and relationships to have like a movie night at the intersection, right?
Yeah.
Possibly having like some poetry nights, having some like socials, like dance socials, maybe even a painting party. So we're working on getting like a stage set up and having music, working with local food trucks to have vending there. So it becomes more of a destination for the community and also for people outside of the Washington Park near West Side as well. Right now too, the cool thing, I am now on the board with the Washington Park Neighbors. We're doing programming for the Washington Park Wednesday. So I wanted to make sure I plug that as well. So I think there's an opportunity to have synergies as well between Art Intersection and Washington Park Wednesdays and drawing people to Washington Park for the programming that is going to be fantastic this year.
Yeah. That is so cool. I'm so excited. I can picture all that you were describing in that space and how new and exciting that will be for Vliet Street. And what you're describing is that balance of, you want a space that's a hub for the neighbors that live there, but you also want to be able to draw folks to the neighborhood that would not have normally made the trip, that there's that element of how can that then have synergy to benefit the other businesses surrounding you on Vliet.
Exactly.
Like there's both sides of that are that are so important, and need someone smart and passionate like you to drive in multiple kind of cultural clusters and areas of the city. So I'm really excited to learn more about what you're up to.
Thanks. Yeah, I couldn't do any of this on my own, to be honest with you. Like,
yeah,
it's been all about other people, mm-hmm. and me leaning on other people and learning from other people.
Yeah,
and being fortunate enough that these individuals that I've connected with were open enough,
right,
to think that what I'm trying to do is something that is worthwhile.
Yeah,
and that they're willing to support me.
Yeah, yeah.
Without that, it wouldn't be a thing.
Yeah. Mm. Well, you know, I want to move to one of our closing questions, which I think will have some ties to what we've just been talking about. But you know, so if you had the power to be in charge of Milwaukee's arts and culture for a little bit, making any change you want, policy or otherwise, what would you do? What's the first thing that you would do?
Oh, that is such a good question. There was so much I would want to do. Can I have multiple answers?
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Okay.
You do have like 3 minutes. No, just kidding. However long you want.
I'll try to make it short. If I had the power to change anything within the arts and culture arena in Milwaukee, or even the world, but starting out with Milwaukee, I would say adding arts education back into schools.
Yeah.
Like full-fledged arts education. That has been, like I said, that has had a major impact on my life. Being able to find ways to express myself and be creative, and it uses our brains in a different way and helps us see things from different perspectives. Mm-hmm. We're able to see how others even express themselves artistically. Yeah. And that expression could be anything. Once again, we have all these different genres of the arts. And at the same time, there are so many ways we can have multiple mediums that melds together, right? And mm-hmm. being experimental with art in general, right? That'll be one of the things I will say that I would change. And another thing I would change is to think about accessibility on the front end of anything that we do in arts and culture and just in anything in life in general, right? Accessibility in regards to people with sensory disabilities, people who have invisible disabilities. Mm-hmm. We have, you know, audio description that's happening within theater houses across the city. And I've been fortunate enough to learn and do that kind of work myself. But the thing is, there's no training in that. So I would also have programming for training for AD work, making sure that any type of event that's going on doesn't have a particular day that accessibility services or access is available for people, that people can go to anything at any time and have access to services or access to art and culture, just like everyone else. I think that'll be like the one major thing that I would change.
Yeah. I love both of those. And I think they're both possible, right? I feel like imagine an art intersectional care that work forward to both of those ideas.
Beyond That'd be this, so dope.
Beyond this brief reign of power.
Yeah, right. Yeah, we can make it happen. I mean, it's not a hard thing to do, I don't think. I mean, I think the main issue is money. Mm-hmm. And the main issue is like people not thinking about it on the front end, you know? Yeah. Because I think once people have the experience of dealing with someone that has a disability of any sort, that's when people make changes, right? Mm-hmm. We have to have like that connection with people. It comes with a story. Then that's when you have empathy, right? That human connection thing once again, you know?
Right.
So it brings us back full circle. That's what Art Intersection MKE is all about. Human connection and using art as a tool or an instrument to bring the community together so we can thrive together. Mm.
Well, Derek, how can people connect with you moving forward with you and Art Intersection?
Oh, you can go to our website, artintersectionmke.com. We have a sign up there for more information. We're going to have email blasts coming out in the near future about our plans. You could also go to our Instagram page. We don't have much on there at this point, but that's growing as Art Intersection MKE. Mm-hmm. and look forward to like working with everyone to build a stronger community together through art.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for joining us today, Derek. Really great to get to know you and for our listeners to get to know you. And we'll see you again soon, I'm sure.
Yeah, thanks again for having me. It's been a privilege. Thank you.
Hey, listeners, thanks for sticking around. If you enjoyed this episode and you'd like to help support the podcast, please share it with others, post about it on social media, or leave a rating and review, or contact us directly at pod@imaginemke.org. Imagine This Podcast is a team effort produced, edited, and hosted by me, Lindsay Sheridan, MacArthur Antigua, and David Lee. You can also listen to back episodes of Black Imagination and Arts Ford MKE, all of which can be found at imaginemke.org/podcasts. To catch all the latest from Imagine MKE, hit us up at Twitter and Instagram at @imagine_MKE or Facebook or LinkedIn, imagine_MKE. Thanks again, and we'll catch you next week when we talk with Sarah DeLeiden. See you then. What are you laughing at?
You can't hear that?
Side note. I hate your dog. I don't hate all dogs. I just hate your dog.
We're going to put Molly barking underneath your War on Pets segment.
The sound bed.
David's chasing after Molly.